This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's been a busy week for President Trump as he set out on his first foreign trip since taking office. Meanwhile, members of Congress on both sides of the aisle are rejecting the president's budget proposal. And the testimony of former CIA Director John Brennan raises concern over contacts between Russian officials and members of the Trump campaign staff last year. Joining us for a look at these stories and the other news in politics are political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken and Howard, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Ken, before we get the discussion started, what's the trivia question for today?
Well, Howard, you're there, right, Howard?
Yes.
You should know this one. Okay.
Okay.
Who said, okay, ready?
Yes.
Who said this yesterday on Facebook about the two of us? You two are so great together.
really, come on, Ken. What's the question?
That's the question. It was Ann Galuzzo of Springfield, Ohio.
Really? I missed that. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Sorry,
that's
Ann.
That's the end.
I apologize for missing that.
Yeah, Ann wrote that, so I thought, okay. But actually, she did write that. But the real
that's a nice thing to say.
It is.
Yeah. It was. She said, you two are so great. And I'm saying, God, that's begging for a mention on the show.
Right.
So I had no choice.
I think we should mention her every month.
Right. She's the only one who thinks that way.
Yeah.
So, okay. Okay, the trivia question is, obviously, there's so much interest in what's going on in Montana. In the special election today in Montana, it's really a beaut there. But anyway, okay, so when was the last time an Ohio special congressional election resulted in a switch in parties? So you can give me the year, you can give me the candidates, you can give me the winner, you can give me the loser, either one. But the last time an Ohio special election, the result of it went from one party to the other.
Okay, so it can be
a special election.
It can be the when or the who. Or if you're really, really smart, both. But whoever calls in first with the answer to that is going to win a political junkie button. And the phone number, 513-419-7100. If you think you know the answer to that, again, the first correct caller will win a political junkie button, 513-419-7100. And since it's the trivia question, I guess we need to start off by talking about what's going on in Montana today.
It's unbelievable. Here it is. I mean, this is it just remind. Well, of course, everything seems to remind everybody of Watergate in 1974, and you know everything that's going on there. But having said that, you have an open seat, as we saw in Kansas, because the Kansas congressman was now the head of the CIA. You have a special election in Georgia where the congressman had been Tom Price. And now you have in Montana Ryan Zinke, who is now the Secretary of the Interior. He left. And he was solidly reelected last year. But now you have an open seat where the Republican candidate is a guy named Greg Gianforte, who closely lost the governor's race last year. He was favored to win, and he may still win this election today, but he's been charged with assault yesterday. Apparently, a reporter from the Guardian newspaper either went into his office or barged into his office while he was preparing to have a TV interview with a TV station, and he put a microphone in his face and said, "What do you think about the health care bill or something like that?" And the story is from the reporter and witnesses, including Fox News, who was there, that Gianforte body slammed the reporter to the ground, and he's now being charged with assault. Now, in some quarters, maybe people, you know, candidates who assault reporters may pick up some votes, knowing how some people feel about the press. But I shouldn't make jokes about that.
Right.
It's just a day before the election. Already it was closer than the Republicans would have liked. This should have been a romp for the Republicans. The Democratic candidate is a guy named Rob Quist, who is not the greatest of candidates. But every time when you have a special election early in a new president's term, it somehow becomes a proxy fight for, what do you think of the new president? And this is, and a lot of people are trying to read more into this about whether, you know, there's some problems with voters and Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump carried Montana, by more than 20 points last year. But, you know, if GN40 loses, the one, let me give you the one PS. Most of the people have already voted. And that's, I hate to say this, I'm not a fan of early voting. I'm really not, because things can happen at the last minute that can change people's minds.
Yes.
Like debates, for example. A lot of people voted in the presidential election last year while the debates were still going on. I just, well, we could talk about that at another point. But we, so anyway, we don't know how it will affect the incident, the assault, the alleged assault could affect today's vote. But boy, if the Democrats win it, which is possible, there will be, you know, headlines and bell ringings all around the country.
But you're saying this and I think Georgia and several other states are being viewed as bellwethers for the midterms.
Exactly. And in Georgia, the seat in Georgia, which is June 20th, there's a guy named John Ossoff, who's he's a first-time candidate. He's raised nearly $9 million. This is the old Newt Gingrich seat. The Democrats haven't won the seat since 1976. It was, you know, the old Gingrich seat, the Tom Price seat. But right now, there's a poll that just came out, had the Democrats up by about 7 or 8 points. So, again, you know, this is a Republican seat.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see those polls. I mean, he came out of the first round, and people were saying, I don't know if he can survive the second round. But it looks like, you know, he may well win this seat.
Yeah, in the first round, all the candidates were on the same ballot.
Right.
And if anybody got a majority, he or she would have been elected outright.
Right.
And he got 48% of the vote.
Yep.
You know, in a seat that, you know, well, of course, but again, there were demographic changes going on in Georgia. Hillary Clinton barely lost that district in 2016 to Trump. But again, Tom Price won it with 65% of the vote. So, my goodness, I mean, if these seats, I mean, who knows what it means? It could be a blip, it could be whatever. But the fact is that if the Republicans will lose Montana, if they lose the Georgia seat, people are going to start to question whether the Republicans could keep control of the House in 2018.
Well, it may be, as Ken says, I mean, you know, it may be a blip, but it's going to be magnified if the Democrats do win the seat. You know, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has already targeted like 59 seats for 2018. You know, they believe really, you know, given the way the Trump administration is going, given the way the Republicans in Congress are going, that they can actually pull this off. And special elections like this, these are the signs. These are what they look for, and they're going to grab a hold of them and run with them.
And if there's any sign of dissatisfaction with Trump, one of two things could happen. Democrats could come out in larger numbers, but it could also depress Republican turnout if Republicans are starting to say, you know, their party is going the wrong direction.
Ken, how welcome has this foreign trip been for President Trump? What do you think about the timing for him?
Well, I don't think it was done deliberately to take people's minds off what's going on at home. But having said that, I think it's been a good trip for the president. Well, it's interesting. I mean, the first trip it was Saudi Arabia, and basically he was treated like royalty. I mean, they just, you know, even though everybody remembers what he said about how much Islam hates us, but you know, the Saudis never liked being lectured by Barack Obama on his human rights record or anything like that. So they welcome the new president. They like Trump a lot. And of course, we know how Netanyahu in Israel felt about Obama, and Netanyahu and Trump got along fine. And then it was interesting when the president went to the Vatican. He met with somebody else wearing a yarmulke. So I thought it was very good. I thought the president was having a good time.
Yeah.
See, that was a little awesome.
Yeah,
there.
That was good.
Yeah, thanks.
But some of the imagery coming out of the Vatican was really not that great.
Well, if you looked at Trump and the family, I mean,
right.
I mean, you know, everybody compares everything, but there's always pictures of the pontiff and Barack Obama smiling, and
right.
It's clear that, as we saw during the campaign, Trump and the Pope Francis are not the best of friends.
No.
The Pope has criticized him on the environment, on climate change, on immigration, things like that, and Trump has fought back. I mean, the thought of a presidential candidate or even a president battling with the Pope is unheard of, but But you know something? I mean, you know, he says terrible things about Saudi Arabia, too, and he got a very warm reception there. So stranger things are happening. But yeah. But I think it's, all in all, I think it's been a good trip. No crazy tweets in the middle of the night. No real embarrassments for the most part.
And there's been some polling that shows that his approval rating has gone up during this foreign trip. Most of it's still showing he's below 50%. But a lot of it shows he's gone up into the high 40s at this point because of the trip.
And I'm surprised because the news back home, I mean, the news has been, I mean, since, you know, I keep thinking of the time that we're only on once a month, you know, or at least I'm on your show only once a month. And I think of everything that happens, not only in a month, but in a week, everything between the Comey firing and the fact that Trump wanted Comey to go easy on Michael Flynn. And then of course, he dismisses Comey. And then he tells the Russians the next day in the White House that Comey was a nut job. And then the Department of Justice picks Bob Mueller as the special counsel to investigate the Russian investigation. So many things happen so fast. It's interesting, the thought of his numbers going up. But, you know, it's a fickle country, and sometimes we can be swayed by headlines. But I think the future looks darker for President Trump than he may think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the rub of this is he has to, like you're saying, he has to come back home.
Right.
The trip will end, and he has to come back home.
Right. Unless they build a wall, unless Mexico builds a wall between Europe and the United States, and then they just don't let it back in. I mean, that's possible. I don't know.
don't give anybody any ideas. Ken, before we go to the break here, give us the question one more time. When we come back, we'll see if some folks can get the answer to it.
The last time a special congressional election in Ohio resulted in a different party winning the seat than the previous incumbent in a special election.
Okay, and we will continue our conversation with Ken and Howard, and we'll get to that trivia question after this. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can be part of the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk@WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, go over the question one more time, then we've got some folks who are lined up to try their hand at this.
The last time a special congressional election in Ohio resulted in the winner being from a different party of the previous incumbent.
Okay. Rob in Dayton's going to try his hand at this. Hi, Rob.
Good afternoon.
Go right ahead. Who do you think it was, or when do you think it was?
For some reason, I want to say it's my congressman. I think Tony Hall was the Democrat, and I want to say Mike Turner originally got the seat in 2002 in a special election.
If memory serves, that's not the correct answer. I think either Tony Hall was defeated or maybe he was appointed something. But
he was appointed something, yes.
But I don't think he left. Did he leave for a special election?
No.
I don't think he did, but that's a good question. I will look this up, because as soon as you said Tony Hall, I'm thinking he did resign his seat in Congress. I think Bush appointed him somewhere to some like food organization.
Exactly.
I will check that, but let's get Rob's information, because he could be right. I don't think he's the right answer.
I don't think it is, but it could be, yeah.
Boy, don't you love when I'm sure of all my facts? No, I think it's actually what I love about this is I love to, you know, look, I learn like everybody else learns stuff, and he could be right. So, Rob, don't go away.
Yeah.
I got to ask Pete a quick technical question. If I click on the next person, will that drop Rob off? So he says, hang on just a second here. Okay. Can I go to the next person yet? I can go to the next person. Audrey in Rochester, New York. Hi, Audrey. All the way from Rochester.
Hi.
Hi.
Great. Thank you.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
My guess is 2005.
Well, do you remember? Do you have any? Well, do you know any of the candidates' names?
Well, they replaced Rob Portman and Gene Schmidt, I think, defeated Paul Hackett.
Well, you're okay. So that's a good guess. That was a special election. Rob Portman did leave Congress, But Gene Schmidt is like Rob Portman, also a Republican. So there was no change in party from the previous incumbent to the Gene Schmidt election.
Right.
Okay. So basically, in that election, the Schmidt hit the fan. Can I say that on the...
Portman was elected in a special election, too.
That's right.
Let's see. Martin wants to try his hand at this question. Hi, Martin.
Hi.
So go ahead. When or who? Or both, if you think you know both.
Taft.
Well, if the only person I'm thinking of is Robert Taft, when Robert Taft was elected to Congress in 1966, he defeated John Gilligan, I believe, who was elected to Congress, but it was not a special election. It was a regular election in November of that year, just a regular Republican defeating a Democrat. I'm looking for a special election. I don't believe Taft was elected in a special election.
No.
Okay. Joe in Springville Village. Hey, Joe, who do you think it was? What or when do you think it was? Or both, if you happen to know.
I think it was... Can you hear me?
Yes, uh-huh.
I think it was Tom Lucan in 1974.
Tom Lucan in 1974 is the correct answer.
Very good.
Very
good, Joe. Congratulations.
What I love about this trivia question is, first of all, this is one of the three elections in the spring of 74 that freaked the Republicans out. The first one was John Murtha being elected in Pennsylvania. Then Gerald Ford's seat in Michigan went to the Democrats. And then this was the old Bill Keating seat. When Bill Keating left to become the head of the Cincinnati Enquirer, Tom Lucan beat a guy named Bill Gratison in a special election in March of 1974. Now, a little plug here. Bill Gratison was my guest on my political junkie show this week. He is fantastic.
Yeah.
Talking about the election and how the Republican turnout was so low because of Nixon and Watergate. And Gratison's a great guy. He wound up serving 20 years in Congress. But the first time he ran, he lost.
They ended up basically, after Lucan beat Gratison, then they basically switched districts. And Gratison won and Lucan won in the West Side district.
But what's interesting,
Gratison,
also,
when he left, that was the one where Portman ran.
That's correct. Portman won the Gratison seat.
Right.
But what's fascinating, in the year of 1974, November, when the Republicans were getting clobbered all over the country,
mm-hmm.
Gratison, the Republican, beat Lucan, the Democrat, in 74, one of the rare Republican pickups in that year. But congratulations to Joe, because it was Tom Lucan and Bill Gratison in 74. And it
Joe,
was in Cincinnati.
Joe, stay on the line with us so that we can find out where to send your prize. And congratulations. Thank you for taking part in the contest.
I think it's fair. Well, can I just interrupt you? I think it's fair. If Rob is proven correct with Tony Hall, I think both, there are two prizes. That's the fairest way to do it.
Okay.
I feel very Solomon-esque today. each one of them gets a half a button.
Well, that's big of you.
since you're Solomon-esque today, Ken, what of the... I don't know what Pete's trying to tell me here.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to Joe for a second. Okay, Joe, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
I just wanted to add that 1966 race, Gilligan versus Taft, I gave Bobby Kennedy my Gilligan for Congress styrofoam campaign hat when he visited Cincinnati to campaign for him.
Wouldn't you love to have that nowadays?
Oh, I was so excited.
And could I throw in a plug, too, and Howard knows this is better than anybody. I collect campaign buttons. I have 70,000 campaign buttons. In that 1964 race, there was a button that said Johnson Gilligan. I have been looking for that button forever, and it came out of either Cincinnati or Dayton or that area, but it says Johnson Gilligan. Or LBJ, I think it says Johnson Gilligan. I have been searching for that button for decades, and I will trade my firstborn for that button. with, including posting.
May I make an appeal to our listeners to please find this button for him? Because
I've been
he has been searching
for a long, long time.
I believe there is somebody in Cincinnati who has that. There has to be.
That's where they're from. That's where it's from.
Right. And Ken, I could suggest if you're ever in Detroit, some of the antique shops there have some fantastic political memorabilia. I found some bumper stickers and buttons and all kinds of neat things and some
of
the
I've talked to some people who were active in that period in Democratic politics, and they don't have it, but it's somewhere. It's got to be somewhere in this town. It
has to be somewhere, yep.
Yep. So let's see here. Getting back to you being Solomon-esque, what of the Russia collusion investigation? I mean, how many investigations do we have going on at this point?
Well, that's a good question, because for the longest time, people were very dismissive of what was going on in the House Intelligence Committee. Of course, for the most part, Devin Nunes, who was the Republican chair, seemed to be more interested in protecting Donald Trump than finding out the truth. So then he stepped aside, and then we don't know what's going on with that. And on the Senate side, they seem to be getting more and more aggressive with Richard Burr, the Republican chair from North Carolina, and Virginia, Mark Warner, as a Democratic co-chair. Now, it's interesting, both committees have subpoenaed Michael Flynn, the former national security advisor, who, you know, left after, it was fired after 26 days or so. And, of course, now we're hearing that Flynn is going to plead the Fifth Amendment. And all you have to do is go to YouTube and listen to Donald Trump mocking people taking the Fifth Amendment, especially those involved in the Hillary Clinton email server case, when several people claimed the Fifth Amendment, and Trump went ballistic and was so dismissive. And now here he has a close ally, Michael Flynn, pleading the Fifth Amendment. It's funny how things, you know, just come back to bite you, right?
And that stuff's all over the social media now.
Yep.
People are just driving it home about Trump. You know, it was a horrible sin in the Clinton case, but
has Trump said anything about this, or has he stayed silent?
I don't believe he said anything.
No,
about
he hadn't
this
said
at all,
a word no. about this.
Can Ken Flynn be compelled to testify? Can Congress make him testify?
He could be held in contempt of Congress.
Yeah,
I think you know he could still plead the Fifth. But I mean, I mean theoretically, if he lied to Congress. If he lied to the Pentagon, which is also being alleged, I mean, theoretically, he could go to prison, but I don't think he could be forced to testify. Now, there's also the Robert Mueller investigation, he being the special counsel appointed by the Justice Department, and he's going to start from scratch. I mean, he's going to start from the very, very beginning. So some people might roll their eyes and say, oh, this is going to go on much longer than expected. But it should be thorough. I mean, we're talking about Trump and Russia as if we know what's there, and we don't. I mean, there's a lot of things that don't look good, and there are a lot of things that, you know, there are obviously questionable things that were said and done, but, you know, were laws broken? I mean, that's why we need these kind of investigations. So there's a lot more to be done, but I just think the Flynn thing is interesting, and I always picture him standing up at the Republican convention last summer in Cleveland, leading the cheers of lock her up.
That's right.
You know, for Hillary Clinton. And it'll be interesting if he gets locked up.
Robert,
we're ahead of ourselves, but still, it's just kind of funny.
And Robert Mueller, I mean, he is beyond reproach.
Unimpeachable, exactly.
Unimpeachable. Republicans, Democrats alike respect this guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a good FBI director for quite a long time. And I think he's going to be taken seriously, has to be taken seriously. And Donald Trump would do well not to try to go after him.
Ken, given that Robert Mueller and James Comey are friends, about the only criticism I've heard is that. Can he stay objective in looking into this?
Well, I mean, actually, I think Comey, for all his mistakes, and I think he made a lot of mistakes. I think the stuff he did in the 2016 election was just beyond belief. But but I think Comey was above board, and I think Comey was objective in trying to get to the bottom of it. I don't think he had it in for Trump. I think he just had it for, you know, was after the truth. And as Howard said, I mean, that's the thing on Mueller from the beginning. This guy is just a top-notch, straight arrow. very thorough, very, you know, and, you know, by the book. And so, yes, they are friends. And I assume we can all, you know, be glued to the TV sets if and when Comey ever testifies before Congress. But when Comey says that Donald Trump said, you know, I want, you know, right after he fires Flynn, and he says, I want the FBI to lay off Flynn. I mean, that sounds creep encroaching of obstruction of justice.
Right.
When President Trump tells the director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, and the NSA director, John Kelly, let me know, please tell me, please announce that I have nothing to do with Russia. And they say, well, we can't say that. It sounds like the president is trying to stifle an investigation, or at least suppress, you know, don't let the facts get out, that kind of stuff. So,
and I'm not going to, you know, compare this to Watergate at this point, but you know that is exactly what the undoing of Richard Nixon was, saying, you know, basically saying to the intelligence community, the FBI, stay away from this. Don't touch this. Leave it alone.
You know, I still remember when Watergate just first broke,
mm-hmm.
and the Democrats were trying to make hay in it for the McGovern campaign in 72. And I remember thinking, I shouldn't admit this, but I do, remember thinking that the Democrats are just desperately trying to come up with something in this Watergate thing, making a big deal of it, as if it's a big deal, and to say, boy, they're really pushing the envelope on this one. I mean, little did we know.
Yeah.
Ken, you know, there will be people who make the argument that what President Trump did doesn't fit the strict definition of obstruction of justice. If you look at the U.S. code that governs it, most of it is talking about judicial proceedings, intimidating jurors, witnesses, judges, things like that. And they'll say, no, this doesn't apply. If you read a little farther into it, though, it sounds like Watergate. That shifted the whole definition of what obstruction of justice is.
It did. And, you know, so Mark, you're making a good point, because there is probably a difference I think there's a difference between the law and politics. And sometimes, look, you know, the fact that Bill Clinton was impeached by the House because he did lie about his affair with Monica Lewinsky, should he have been impeached? Look, he lied. He certainly lied. So a lot of it has to do with politics. And, of course, the difference between Clinton and Monica Gate and Nixon and Watergate and now is, back with Nixon, he had a Democratic Congress. Back with Clinton, he had a Republican Congress. This time, all the players are on the same side, or at least in the same party. We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, on the same side.
Randy sent us an email. He says that CBS reported last night on that the Russians leaked a fake document that influenced Comey to make his statement about Clinton's email. And he's wondering if we have heard, has that been proven to be true or false? Has anybody heard anything more on that?
I just read about that today, and I didn't know about this at all, but apparently it was a document that suggested that alleged something about Hillary Clinton emails, and that's where it really got Comey's attention. And I think that's why Comey got very excited about the prospect of a Clinton scandal, I mean, because he was investigating it. But now it seems like it came from a Russian dirty trickster type thing, that it wasn't real at all. But again, this morning is the first time I ever saw it before. Another interesting thing about Russian interference in the 2016 election.
513-419-7100, if you would like to join our conversation. Let's talk to Jerry in Covington. Hi, Jerry.
I'm here.
You're here. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was Bill Gratison's campaign manager in that special election that you were talking about, and I tuned into your station, or, you know, late. I obviously knew the answer to your question, but my reason I'm wanting to talk to you, I thought I heard one of you say that you were with Bill Gratison recently, and if that is true, how's he doing, and what's going on with him in his life?
Well, I have a podcast, The Political Junkie, that I think there's a link on WBXU. I'm not sure if there is, but if you go to krpoliticaljunkie.com, I have a podcast that goes out every week, The Political Junkie. And this week, I spoke to him yesterday to talk about his one of those special election defeats that began the beginning of the end for the Republicans in 74, and it was so much fun. He's 88 years old, but he's still active in banking policy, in health care policy. You know, he resigned from Congress in 93 to be the head of the Health Insurance Company of America or something like that.
Right.
But it was so much fun. Everything sounded like it was yesterday. We were talking about the Bill Flax primary and the John Birch Society. I mean, words we haven't heard and talked about in so many decades.
Yeah, he's a fine gentleman. I mean, I've known him for many years.
I wish I could always, I love doing these interviews, but of course, the banter I have with these guests before we actually record is often very much fun. And actually, one of the reasons I got Bill on the show is that I used to work with his daughter, Robin Gradison, when she was at ABC News and then also at NPR. Yeah. She's now at NBC News, but he was gushing the fact that he's now a great grandfather, and it just sounded so good and up, sometimes I've had guests on the show who sounded their age, but Bill sounded the way I've heard him sound for decades already. He's just really a neat guy.
That's good to hear.
Jerry, thank you for the phone call, and we'll have more with Ken and Howard coming up. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me today, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, what was your takeaway from the testimony that was given by former CIA Director John Brennan the other day?
Well, it sounds like it's just more of the same, but the fact is that he seemed to have an indication that there were just people who were not telling the truth, certainly with the Michael Flynn story about his income, about his relationship with Russia, about his relationship with foreign governments. As Howard said, I mean, is it Watergate? It seems almost facile to compare everything to Watergate. Just like every time we have a Democratic primary, it's always a proxy battle between Hillary and Bernie. I mean, it's not what reality is all about, but it just seems like there are people whose integrity has not been questioned by others who are saying that something is not smelling really right in this government, and certainly Brennan's testimony got to that.
Yeah, it's interesting. The headlines I saw after that, Ken, from CNN, ex-CIA chief John Brennan, Russians contacted Trump campaign. But the article does note that Brennan stopped short of calling it collusion. The Washington Times headline essentially read, "The White House says former CIA director's testimony vindicates President Trump of allegation of collusion with Russian spies." So it sounds like this could be going on for a long time before we finally know what's really the case.
We're just at the beginning of this thing. I mean, this is just beginning.
To Brennan's credit, though, he should not be saying, connecting the dots when he's not sure. So I think it was a measured testimony. You know what I'd like to talk about a little bit, if we have a little time left? I'd like to talk about what's happened to the health care bill and what the CBO had to say about it yesterday.
Because
there are a lot of Republicans out there who were very proud of the vote they had in passing, the American Health Care Act, the anti-Obamacare Act. And now the CBO is talking about 14 million more people with insurance in the next year, 23 million more without insurance in 2016. The fact that premiums will go up a lot, that deductibles will go up a lot, that the poor and the uninsured and the sick will pay much more. Look, who knows what affect elections. I mean, they do, but there are a lot of things to happen before we're in 2018. But right now, I mean, it seems hard for me to see how the Republicans can defend this, especially if so many more millions of more people are going to be without insurance.
Ken, you and I both know that the video of the congressional Republicans out on the steps with the president just, you know, having a big old time, smiling, laughing, high-fiving after this vote is going to come back. And it's going to come back in the form of campaign commercials for Democratic congressional candidates in 2018, because this thing is going to be an issue. It's already an issue. It's being raised by prospective candidates here in some of the congressional districts where Republicans voted for this Republican Health Care Act.
And you know, I agree with you, but at the same time, I think that we know that whatever the Senate is going to do to that bill will look nothing like what the House did.
Yeah,
and then it'll, of course, come back for a conference committee, and maybe the initial vote will disappear as an issue. I don't know, but I mean, I tell you, if the election were today, and it's not, of course, but if the election were held today, these votes, the votes on the Republican plan on to repeal Obamacare, I think is going to hurt the Republican Party.
Yeah, the effects of it might fade away, but the imagery and the fact that they actually cast these ballots or cast these votes is going to come back and haunt them.
And so the Senate still has to vote on this new health care bill. So why are the Republicans spending so much time on bills that have no chance of surviving both houses? It'll just end up being completely changed. I mean, by 2018, are they going to have any kind of a record to even run on?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I was talking to Tom Davis, a former congressman from Virginia, was on my show a few weeks ago, and I said, well, why would you vote for a bill that, one, will not look like reality at the end? And he said, look, if the Republicans defeated the Ryan plan, which would have been the second defeat in a row, it would have hurt the Republican Party and would not have advanced the bid to get rid of Obamacare. So his thought was, just pass anything, just get it out of the House, let the wiser folks in the Senate do its magic, and it may take months to do it, but let the Senate change it, and then maybe it'll come back to more reality where both sides could vote on it. But I think the feeling was, you know, the Republicans have been talking about repealing Obamacare nonstop since 2010. So they have the opportunity, pass it, pass anything, and then bring it to the Senate and let them do their work.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. Ken, what about the budget? I mean, that's going to be, talk about the health care bill not coming out in its original form, but Trump's budget that he released the other day, how much of a fight is this going to cause? I mean, I hear it's opposed by both sides.
Yeah, these budget things are always political documents that don't always have a sense of reality as well. And there are a lot of Republicans who have said it's dead on arrival. But to see what it's done to, you know, there's a great quote when Donald Trump announced his candidacy, he promised that things like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security would not be touched. This is a major cut in the growth of Medicaid that he's proposing. It's a major cut in the State Department. Like one third of the State Department's budget is disappearing. It's a major cut in foreign aid. And, you know, America's standing in the world has often been based a lot on foreign aid. It's a tremendous cut in the UN. And there are people in the United Nations who say that they don't know if the UN can function with such cuts. Of course, it's a tremendous cut in public broadcasting. And, you know, there are some, you know, NPR local public radio stations that are doing fine, thank you very much. But there are a lot who desperately depend on the federal subsidies, and they could be in jeopardy as well. So, you know, the military does well, and defense does well, and national homeland security does well, the building of the walls and things like that. But all those other things, the environment, you know, all those things get huge hits, and it's not popular with the Congress, including many Republicans.
And plus, what I've been hearing is that this is going to cut subsidies to farmers, which is a huge Trump constituency, plus a lot of middle class folks as well. Also, a good number of them who are Trump constituents.
Yeah, they say that it's interesting that many of the people who will suffer the most by this proposed budget are the people who voted for Donald Trump last year.
Yeah, there are dozens of Republicans in Congress who are in districts that either voted for Hillary Clinton or where Donald Trump had only a small margin of victory. Those people have got to be very nervous about this because it could come back and haunt them again.
513-419-7100. Let's talk to Dave in Cincinnati. Hi, Dave.
Hello. I don't know whether you guys noticed that Mike Pence set up a campaign committee for 2020 for the presidency, which seems awfully odd. And I scratched my head about that. But then I realized that, in fact, he can take defense funds, defense lawyer funds, out of that. And in fact, that's what Trump's going to do with his when he's now that he's lawyered up. I just wondered if you guys caught that and whether you realize how wide the circle can get with the attorney general, the vice president, all the way down the line of succession. Most people can see down to Orrin Hatch, not that anybody's been impeached or going to be impeached, but that's what the threat is. So did you catch it? What do you think of it? And by the way, that was a Washington Post story last night on the Russian memo that was that the FBI had since January and didn't bother to carefully apparently vet. And then because Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, is mentioned in that memo in a very false way, the claim is that's why Comey did not go to Loretta Lynch when he made the initial press conference about Hillary, where he lambasted her behavior with security, but said he wasn't going to pursue criminal action.
Dave is talking about the earlier email we got about the report that the Russians leaked a fake document that influenced Comey when he was looking at Hillary Clinton's emails. Dave, thank you for the phone call. Ken?
Well, Dave said, you know, if the top of everybody in the top is involved somehow, it goes down to it might be Orrin Hatch who will be the next president. How about this? I'm thinking of Kiefer Sutherland because, you know, I think he was a designated survivor. I think he could be the next president if everybody look, you know, we always talk about these fantasies about they'll impeach the president and the vice president. It is interesting to me that Mike Pence does have a political action committee. And it's also interesting to me that on the day of his inauguration, I think, Donald Trump announced his candidacy for reelection. I mean, they're certainly thinking ahead. I think I don't know what to make of Pence because, you know, there are some people who say that he was in the dark. I mean, but he was the head of the transition committee. So how much vetting did he do of Michael Flynn and his security background and things like that? So a lot of people who are saying, some people are saying, well, you know, Pence may be the innocent bystander in all this and not involved in whatever cover-ups or secrets or whatever. And others are saying, well, he had to have known if he was the head of the transition committee, and therefore he may be as culpable as Donald Trump if indeed there is a criminal investigation. But again, we have no idea where it's going.
And he needs to hedge his bets on these things.
Remember, he was the guy. I mean, he was the guy who was rescued by Donald Trump. He was in a losing election for re-election for governor of Indiana, and Trump didn't want Chris Christie or Newt Gingrich because they could outshine Trump, and you're not allowed to outshine Trump. So Pence seemed to be the perfect choice for BP, a reliable conservative. Certainly, social conservatives loved him, and he was going to be just a. You know, a quiet running mate like the vice presidents used to be. But, you know, I have a button from 1970 or 71 that says keep Nixon alive. And it's a picture of Agnew on the button. So, you know, you just wonder what's, you know, I mean, look, you never know what's going to happen. And certainly who could have predicted what you know, Trump has only been president for 4 months. And my goodness, so much has happened.
Well, and Ken, what are your thoughts on how leaky this administration has been? I mean, have you ever seen one that's leaked as much as this one?
No, but it's also interesting to me that everyone between Sean Spicer and Devin Nunes and others investigating Republicans who have been investigating scandals, they seem to be more concerned about the leaks than potential illegal activities. But there has been a look. Look, you know, Donald Trump does not come from politics. A lot of the people he put in position, he may not have even known personally. He doesn't have a long history with the Republican Party or a loyal history with the Republican Party. And, And I don't know if his administration is filled with never Trump people, but you're absolutely right. There is more leaking here than I've ever seen before. You're absolutely right.
I think it's probably a byproduct of just a White House staff that's totally divided and at war. You know, there's people at war with each other.
And not the kind of, but look, if you think of all these, a lot of them are Goldman Sachs people. They don't come up from the ranks of politics. And so,
no.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting.
It's a completely different world for them. You know, and you mentioned Sean Spicer, Ken. There were reports that he might be on his way out. So I wondered if you had any thoughts on that. And who would want that job? I mean, that's...
Well, you know something? I mean, it's hard to defend a president who's in the middle of a crisis. And, you know, we saw that with Nixon's... You know, was it Ron Ziegler who said a lot of embarrassing things during... But, you know, sometimes you could... You could be a very effective press secretary and not being dragged into the scandal. I remember Mike McCurry, who was Bill Clinton's press secretary in the middle of Monica Gate. I think McCurry went out of his way not to know what was going on with the investigation. And reporters tried over and over and over again to get him to comment on it. Says, look, I don't know about it. I'm not privy to it. And I'm just not going to speculate.
And I'm not sure how privy Sean Spicer is to everything. I don't, how much time he spends in the Oval Office alone with the President of the United States.
Quick thoughts on this, Ken. FBI director to replace Comey. I mean, Joe Lieberman's out of the picture now. Is there anybody else waiting in the wings at this point?
You know, I don't know. I mean, there was some talk that he was going to name somebody to replace Comey before the president would name somebody before he went on his foreign trip. There are a lot of names thrown out there. I thought Lieberman would have been an interesting choice, but I think Democrats would have hated it. And it seemed like the only person excited about it was John McCain, his pal. But I don't know. I just don't know. I think once they named Bob Mueller, it changed the dynamic of the whole thing. And so any imminent naming... is not as close as I thought it might be.
Ken and Howard, thank you for joining me this afternoon. Always fun talking to you.
Thank you.
Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson.